For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ah, this trip on me, I feel amazing. And you're so special as the occasion. And I pop champagne like it's a celebration. All across the nation. Are you ready?
P-L-A-N-T-A.
Are you ready?
P-L-A-N-T-A.
Are you ready?
P-L-A-N-T-A.
Are you ready?
Hello and welcome along to the On the Whistle and Shirtless Plantain collaboration. We are reviewing the Africa Cup of Nations final, and wasn't it a classic with the Ivory Coast winning on home soil 2-1 against Nigeria Super Eagles. I'm the On the Whistle podcast host, Zain Nabi, and I'm privileged to say coach from the Shirtless Plantain show, and our man on the ground, Alistair Howarth, are joining me today. Lads, how are you doing the night before one of the best finals we've probably witnessed in African football history?
I'll go first, because I'm sure Coach needs time. He's probably not finished morning after last night. Hey, Zain, I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I didn't get home until almost 4 a.m. last night from the stadium.
Cry me a river, you're in Abidjan.
Hey, but let me tell you, I had so many people messaging me being like, oh, the atmosphere must be amazing. Send me videos of the parties and stuff. And I was saying, what parties? I'm still at the stadium at 2:30 in the morning. Wait. The Ivorians didn't even come out until like 1 o'clock in the morning. And they, but say, let me tell you, what a pleasure. What an honor. What a tournament. I think I was so nervous yesterday. Mm-hmm. Because we'd had the best tournament in the history of this competition, and I was so worried that the final was going to be almost dead rubber is not the word, but a damn squid. Like, I think of the previous 10 finals, there had been 7 goals in this tournament. Like, this tournament, even when it provides shocks, you know, entertainment, blah blah blah, the finals are almost always very very tight, very very boring, full of, you know, nothing in terms of incidents, goals, blah blah blah. Whereas last night was, you know, the first half, again, I was scared that Nigeria were going to get the 1-0 win, because for me, mm-hmm. as a neutral, that was the worst result, you know, just 1-0 Nigeria, shut the game down, kind of kill the game, just like they did the first time they played. But, you know, fortunately for me, as a neutral, we got that equalizer, we got that brilliant winner. You know, it was a game with controversy. I'm sure Coach will get into that, but it was an amazing end to the tournament, and the kind of end that we deserved in terms of the excitement, the atmosphere.
Before I bring Coach in, because he obviously has a vested interest here, but I've been practicing this question, so I've got to ask you it, Alistair. What was it like being in the Alisson Watra Stadium with Alisson Watra there?
Well, it was quite interesting. I've never seen a head of state be like
in his own
one
stadium.
Of the guys. Like, you should have seen, yeah, before the trophy lift, Mr. Ouattara in his own stadium was like dancing and partying with the players. They were loving him. Like, it was amazing. The atmosphere was incredible. Ivorians, I used to always think that Congolese people were the most gifted mm-hmm. musically in the world.
I mean, not Nigerians. I mean, I can
to dance,
that.
To sing.
Not Nigerians.
But Ivorians, oh my goodness, it was just a huge party for like 2 hours just in the stadium. They had all these brilliant chants. My favorite chant of the Ivorians throughout the tournament has been this variations of essentially them chanting, the loose translation is, we are useless, but we've qualified to the next round. And they've been singing this every tournament, every match. And tonight, last night, they were finally able to sing, we were worthless, but we're champions. And I think that summed it up perfectly, the environment, just this kind of joy, unbridled joy that comes from the realization that they did not deserve to be there. Sure. They shouldn't have been there by all rights, and yet somehow they still were.
Well, listen, I think that is a perfect segue to Coach. And I remember watching, because I was watching from afar on the feed that was coming through. And obviously, we see the goal from Troostekong Kong. And then we see Kanu, the legend, the Arsenal man, the Super Eagle, standing up, dancing, looking so happy. And then as the game unfolds, they pan back to him. And there's this just desolate look, no dancing, no singing. What was it like for you, Coach, given you're an Arsenal fan who also loves the Super Eagles?
So first of all, I think, you know, my prediction of there being 3 goals in the final came to fruition. I just didn't think it would go against me.
I had
a bad feeling, considering where Ivory Coast came from, basically. The fact that they were we titled one of our podcasts Back from the Dead. That's how finished Ivory Coast were. They were not supposed to be at all. And I always had this sneaky feeling that they're just the team of destiny this tournament. And I was just hoping that we could potentially just somehow spoil the party. But sometimes you can't fight fate. It was meant for them to win. You know, that's just the bottom line. Regardless of how, you know, you want to spin it, oh, I don't like this style of football, I prefer this style of football, whatever, doesn't really matter, because Ivory Coast are always going to win it. That was clear from day one, I think, at this point, because, yeah, your best player scoring your opening goal of the tournament, and then, you know, the final goal of the tournament is scored by someone who's survived testicular cancer. Like, it is the perfect story, you know, regardless of how well Nigeria unfortunately were just a side character in all of this, you know. And I hate saying that because Nigeria aren't the side characters.
I got to ask you this, and we'll get to Halle's story because it's amazing. But yeah. Were you happy with the way Pissarro had set up? Because, I mean, it was park the bus from early on, right?
Do you mean yesterday or just throughout the tournament?
Well, the final.
Yeah, I was, because I knew that we couldn't compete with them in midfield. You don't. You know, there was interesting battles there, but ultimately they're just too good. They're just too good for us in midfield. So accepting who we are and what we are as a team, any good team that's worth their salt knows exactly what their strengths and weaknesses are. Had we persisted with that 4-3-3, we'd probably go out in the second round, or you know, in the quarterfinals, because we don't have the capabilities of sustaining that type of football. What Nigeria do have the capabilities of is suffocating teams and taking a sting out of games and taking our chances. And that's what's got to the final. So I had no issues with that. My main issue was because of how bad we got stung in the semi-finals by playing high but not actually pressing, Pissarro's gone the opposite direction now and played really, really deep, and Osimhen is completely and utterly isolated. So we've given more of the game to Ivory Coast. Which again, conceding possession at Ivory Coast is not a bad thing. It's just that we wasn't clever with it, and we didn't snap at them in midfield as much as we should have. You know, we looked leggy, and we looked kind of out of ideas, and that's what annoyed more than anything. The setup itself to me was fine. It was just the way we actually carried it out. That's what annoyed me.
Well, let me ask this question nice and open. Ali, where was the game won or lost for you?
I think it was lost from a Nigerian perspective in the beginning of that second half. So, like, yeah, I think there was some question marks over some of the selections coming into the game. I think the biggest one was Chukwueze. I really don't know why he started when Moses Simon has had a very good tournament. You know, like, it didn't make any sense to me. But I think, and even Pissarro admitted it himself, as he said, he didn't change anything about the team until they were losing 2-1. But, you know, for me, the first half of this game followed the pattern of the first Nigeria-Cote d'Ivoire game to the T. Like, Cote d'Ivoire dominating possession, not creating many clear-cut chances. Nigeria looking quite comfortable, defending, not being very creative going up front. But they find a way to score. Troostekong scores, you know, from a set piece again. You know, this time, whatever, corner, not a penalty. But if in the second half, I think it almost felt like Pissarro had forgotten that Ivory Coast this time had Adjingra and Allaire. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, that is where he went wrong, because, and this is crazy to say, but because I think over the tournament, Olaina has been by far and away the best right back at this tournament. He's been brilliant. But last night, he was being torn to shreds by Adingra the whole game. Every time Adingra would stand him up, and that's what I love about Adingra, is you saw him compared to...
He won one duel the entire game. I remember him winning one duel, and that was it. The rest of it was all Adingra.
Yeah. And that's what I love about Adingra, is unlike, and you could see the difference between him and a Chukwueze, a Lookman, a Gradel, is all the other guys, they kind of stand up defenders, and then they kind of, whether it's a step over, they try and jink inside, they try and do... Adingra, he stands up a player and he immediately bursts past them. And every time, he almost did the exact same thing to Aina every time. Got the ball, looked like he was going to come inside, stood him up, and then immediately went to the byline. Because, you know, although he's right-footed, he could play on his left. And he absolutely tore him to shreds. So for me, that was where the game was lost. It was very, very clear that Cote d'Ivoire had the pressure. It was very, very clear that, unlike the time before, it wasn't just aimless crosses into a Crasso or a Boga or whoever was playing in that first game, is it was Adingra and Allaire were the ones actually being threatening. So for me, Pesero had to make changes early in the second half, other than bringing Simon on. But he needed to bring on, I don't know, Bright, say Samuel or someone, take off Ajayi and bring on a more mobile center back to help out Aina. Like he needed to make some kind of change because Adingra was just having so much space, getting so much joy. So I think for me, that's where the game was lost, is Pesero has shown that he's brilliant at setting up a defensive unit. He's brilliant at creating a kind of a functional team that for tournament football, that's perfect. It's exactly what you want. And there, for the most part in this tournament, he's had an Osimhen who has been able to create chances from virtually nothing. And that's been the difference for Nigeria. Whereas last night, you could see the tournament finally caught up with him. You know, the injuries, the knocks, you know, that guy feels like he's playing with one leg and he's still the best striker at the tournament. But it finally caught up to him. And it felt like when Osimhen couldn't create everything by himself, couldn't bring in Lookman, couldn't do everything like that, Nigeria didn't have anything. And that's, for me, where Pesero has let himself down and Nigeria down, is particularly in the second half. He didn't make the changes that were needed.
Can I ask, though? I mean, with Osimhen didn't have the best of game yesterday, but I feel like it was such a fine margin, because it felt as if a lot of the duels that he got into yesterday, in games gone by, the referee just lets the game go on. And it seemed as if every time he got in front of the defender, the whistle just went every time. And those are opportunities where he's won the ball, and essentially he can turn and face the defense. Somebody's running off him, he can play into space. And every time the whistle didn't go, Lookman, Chukwueze, or Simon got the ball in space and were able to run at their man. It just felt as if those happened so few times. It just felt as if There was a stricter line of what they would give yesterday than any other part of the tournament, and not just for Osimhen, for other players. I remember particularly in this South Africa game as well, Evidence was going nuts, and I loved big strong strikers, you know, bodying their centre backs, and it seems as if, you know, they were letting it go, and then in the final it was the opposite, almost like, oh well, no, we can't, you know, that's almost too rough, when it's like the entire tournament has been the opposite of that. The game's been flowing, the referee's been great. And, you know, Nigeria didn't deserve to win yesterday, but if I'm being honest, I think they saved not only did Nigeria save their worst performance of the tournament for the final, I think so did the referee as well, to be honest. Like, it just felt as if there was something changed. And, you know, thank God there was no need for VAR yesterday as well, but it genuinely just felt like something changed. But do you know what? I actually want to go back to your point about where Nigeria lost the game. I also feel as if when he made the sub, when he was making changes, tactically, all he could have done was told our right winger, whoever it was at the time, drop 10 yards. Even if you're not going to double up on Adingra, just make sure that when he gets the ball, his angles are cut off. That's all you really have to do, really. But the fact that that didn't even happen, I was like, okay, cool. I had a feeling this is where the game would go, because good football teams get the ball to their best players consistently, and good football teams stop that happening. And Nigeria didn't stop that happening, unfortunately. So I have no real complaints, you know. But Pesero himself, you know, the fact that he's really honest and humble about how the game went, kind of thing, I genuinely do think it's a good sign, because he was honest and humble enough to change the system after the first game as well. So it's clear it's a sign that somebody that knows, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of this team, and also strengths and weaknesses of himself. It's just a bit disappointing that it all kind of caught up with them yesterday more than anything.
Well, I was going to say, we've spoken a lot about Pissarro and some of the changes that he made or didn't make. But when we look at Emerson Faye, who's come in as the interim manager of the Ivory Coast, one would imagine he's done enough to get the job, even though he's got no experience, really, for such a high-profile position. But on the BBC commentary that I was watching, there were a lot of calls, particularly midway through the second half, to substitute Allaire and Adingra. Mm-hmm. A lot of the commentators feeling that they were slow, sluggish, Allaire specifically clutching his leg. In the end, his faith in Allaire specifically paid off, and mm-hmm. we've spoken about Adingra and the threat he was made. I mean, watching it in the stadium, Alistair, did you get a sense that it was risky to keep Allaire on as long as he did?
Yeah, honestly, yeah, I did. I remember thinking that same, not Adingra, because actually when I remember specifically when Diakite came on, is I was like saying to the guy next to me, like, he has to come on for Gradel, not Adingra. You have to keep Adingra on. You have to keep Adingra on. But Allaire, yeah, I said that. I really wanted him to come off. I thought he wasn't providing anything. He looked so tired. Mm-hmm. But like kind of as Coach alluded to earlier, with strikers at that elite level, the margins are so fine. Mm-hmm. Even if you're having a bad game, even if you can't contribute, they have the ability to do that. No one else on that pitch, bar Osimhen, I think, has the now kind of striker's instinct to finish how Allaire did. And if he had come off, you know, Jean-Philippe Crasso, he's done a decent job, but he's not scoring that goal. He's not finding that half yard of space, that clever little touch to find the net. And no, yeah, I think, you know, obviously I wasn't listening to any commentary, but I think they're spot on in terms of bringing off Allaire. I thought he needed to come off. I thought there was no way he could keep going, and he wasn't going to offer anything. And yet, you know, when it mattered most, he did. And even the other chances, you know, he almost scored that brilliant bicycle kick.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what someone like him provides. And say, you know, same with Osimhen. The difference is that Cote d'Ivoire were able to get the ball into the box. Mm-hmm. Were able to create half chances that Allaire could make something of, whereas Nigeria weren't able to. But yeah, no, I think it's, and that's always going to be, you know, the wonderful thing about football is, like, sometimes coaches make the wrong decision and it pays off. Sometimes they make the right decision and it doesn't pay off. You know, that's the beautiful thing about the sport, is that variability, that kind of chaos, that how sometimes out of your hand. And so I think, I do think that Allaire should have come off, and it shows both how me and the BBC commentary made to look like fools.
well, let's stay on Allaire for a second, because I know, Coach, you mentioned earlier his inspirational story. Yeah. A year ago, he was recovering from testicular cancer, comes back, makes a comeback for Dortmund, makes a comeback for the Ivory Coast, and scores one of the sweetest winners you can imagine. I mean, this is an inspirational story in a team that had so much dysfunction at the start of the tournament, but found a way to be functional and found a way to win.
Yeah. When you talk about teams of destiny, throughout football history, you know, club sides, international sides, you can name loads. Like, you can go all the way back to the year 2004. There was two, you know, there was Porto, there was Greece. There was Porto in the European Championships. There was Porto in the Champions League. There was Greece in the European Championships. You know, you come a bit more recently, 2016, the Euros, Portugal. That Portugal side was terrible, to be honest, but they found a way. Throughout football history, there's always a team that, no matter what the odds are against them, Leicester in 2016 as well, like, you know, no matter what the odds are, they just find a way. They find a way. On Valentine's Day 2016, Arsenal beat Leicester, and the 2 points behind them, Leicester go and win 8 or 9 games in a row, 1-0 or something like that, and essentially wins in the league. It's, sometimes there's certain things that you simply cannot deny, and Ivory Coast and Hullo were not to be denied this tournament at all. Best possible start, followed by two losses, and then they sack their coach. And then you're thinking, hold on a second, how is this going to pan out? The moment they got through their round of 16, I was like, all right, they 100% get to the final. I remember I spoke to someone and they were like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm really, really glad that Morocco and Angola are out. I was like, on the other side of the draw, that's probably where the winner will be. And the other side of the draw was Congo and Ivory Coast. And I had a feeling that had Congo beat Ivory Coast, I wouldn't have wanted to face them. I wouldn't have wanted to face Ivory Coast either. But one of those two, to me, were the teams to get through. Because Congo got to the semis winning only one game, right? That's something to be worried about. And then Ivory Coast, Ivory Coast, we've mentioned as well, again, you know, like the circumstances, they managed to find themselves in to get to the semis as well. When you're a team of destiny, nothing is going to go against you. Like, you're going to win. Like I said, Nigeria played their part, you know, showing that look where, you know, there's life in this team, you know, some old heads, some young heads and whatnot, but ultimately, like, it was probably just a step too far. And then on top of that, you add Haller's story to Ivory Coast, a really amazing story, and it's almost like, how can they lose? Like, it's almost
sure.
I think the only game he played, the only two games he played this tournament was the semis and the final, right? If I remember correctly.
They had only two started, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. There's nothing more you can really say about this tournament. Like, there's so many underlying narratives and stories and whatnot that it's almost a joke. Like, he could have easily not played that semi as well and only played the final. It would have went the exact same way. You know, he was not to be denied. And from a personal standpoint, I'm actually heartbroken. But as someone that's, you know, that's dealt with, that has people around him, you know, that have survived cancer as well, I genuinely couldn't be happy for him. I think he's not only the story just inspirational to people that have survived cancer, but it's inspirational to absolutely anybody. Like, that no matter what, no matter the circumstances, you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. Like, he just kept on going. He just kept on going. And he's arguably given like the biggest day in Ivorian history in the last God knows how many years. I'm a loss for words, honestly. I might actually consider writing a little story about this, because there's so many narratives that went that's gone.
Honestly. Well, I'll keep us moving, because Haller is obviously an inspirational part of it. Yeah. But let me make this case to you. We have seen success with teams when they've changed managers. Sometimes when it's looked like it's not the most well thought out decisions. If you're a Chelsea fan, you've won the Champions League with Roberto Di Matteo and Thomas Tuchel, both, if I'm correct, coming at a time where they were changed in the middle of a season. Zinedine Zidane started his dynasty at Real Madrid, coming in midway through a season and then winning three on the bounce. And with Emerson Faye, you have the situation where in his debut, they beat Senegal on penalties. Then they go on to knock out Mali in the quarterfinals, who were one of the form teams. DRC might not have the name of a superpower on the continent, but when you look at that workman squad, one of the hardest teams to beat.
Yep.
And then, of course, they get it back and they beat Nigeria, who, of course, they lost to. I want to just get some thoughts on the interim manager. Is this his success? Does he deserve any credit? Is this player-led? And what is the future? Give me your raw thoughts, guys. Coach, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll just mention just one point, because I think it is probably what essentially won them the tournament. It's the fact that Gasquet didn't start Seri. And I remember I remember in our preview pod, on our first pod, Alistair, we spoke about the fact that they have so much midfield depth and Seri isn't starting at all. The moment Seri comes into the team, their whole attack changes, because he's able to get the ball into their forwards and into their better players so easily, effortlessly, in fact. And that wasn't the case in the group stages at all. And it baffled me that Gasquet didn't actually start him at all. So Faye recognised that straight away, and it almost feels as if that he almost knew these players better than Gasquet. That's why he was like, okay, looking at the composition of my team, looking at what I have available, who's the player that can actually change the trajectory of this team? I have Sangare, I have Fofana, I have the guy that scored equalizer. I've forgotten his name. Oh my gosh, Kessié. None of these players are in any way, shape, or form similar to Seri. So he's essentially our trump card, and he's the wild card basically here, despite his style of play being the exact opposite. And then that's why you could have the midfield rotations of Sangare starting some games, or Kessie is starting some games kind of thing. And it really made life difficult for teams. You know, how are they going to line up? How are Ivory Coast going to line up? That was a masterstroke and the main difference between them pre-fi and post and then post-Gasquet basically.
I think it's, you know, obviously it's so hard to know exactly what's going on behind the scenes in a national team and know what the relationships are like. But one thing that you got a sense of is, and you know, this was a big question mark for Côte d'Ivoire coming into this tournament, and probably the biggest stick to beat them with was, you know, we've spoken about this so much on this podcast that over the last 5 years we've seen this amazing emergence of African coaches flying the continent's flags so high, you know, led by Aliou Cisse, Jamal Belmadi. You know, obviously we've had on the club side of things, Pizzo Massimane is a good friend of the podcast, and he has done so much in terms of breaking barriers, shattering glass ceilings for, you know, Black and sub-Saharan African coaches, both on the continent and abroad. And one of the things that you spoke to with people ahead of the tournament was around this Côte d'Ivoire team was, A, there were question marks. Gasse has never coached on the continent, you know, and we've spoken about this time and time again. Even Radhi Jaidi, when he came onto the podcast just before the tournament, was talking about this, how he was saying, look, it doesn't matter if you're from the continent. And he was speaking specifically about players who are kind of Tunisian, but born in France and England, wherever. And he said, but you have to have experience on the continent. You have to have games under your belt. And Gasse didn't. And there's also a sense that Emers Faye, as kind of coach alluded to, that he has a connection with these players that Gasse never had. And, you know, and it's not hard to understand that Gasse is kind of a, I don't want to kind of besmirch him too much, but he's a very old French guy who's been kind of airdropped into this team to take charge of them. Whereas Emers Faye is a former player, someone who's coached a lot of young players. You know, he spent his entire coaching career at Nice, Montpellier, in the youth sides, and then taking over, you know, for the Ivorian team. He knows what it means to play for Côte d'Ivoire. You know, he's been to a final and lost it with Côte d'Ivoire, you know. And he, you know, so many times in press conferences, that's what the questions were about. It was, Emers, you weren't able, you know, you had to cut your career short, so you weren't able to be a part of the 2015 team that won the AFCON. You were part of the what was it, 2008, the team that lost them on penalties. You know, you've suffered this. What does it mean for you to play? And so he's able to connect with the players in a way that Gasse was never able to. He's able to, you know, and he spoke so much about kind of looking in the mirror, looking at ourselves, what have we done wrong? How can we improve? A lot of introspection. And even like Kessie spoke a lot about that as well. Edinger spoke about it, how this team kind of had to look at themselves, had to, you know, essentially pick themselves up from nothing. And I don't think Gasse could have done that if he had stayed. I think Emers Faye was the one who's done that. Look, is Emers Faye a great coach? Is he a great tactician? We don't know yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe he is. Maybe he'll become a brilliant coach. We won't know based off this tournament. Carried this team to the end of the tournament is brilliant man management, is inspirational coaching. It's not tactics. And for that, you know, he has been a difference maker. Yeah, sorry, coach.
Now, I was going to say, although we don't know, you know, if you'll be a great tactician or all those kind of thing, I feel like a lot of those things are overstated. Great coaches and great managers at a base level understand what their players' strengths and weaknesses are,
100%.
In relation to others. So, for I'll give a really easy example here. If you're a Man City coach, you're not going to start Grealish. You're not going to start Grealish, Alvarez, and Nunez all together, basically, because everybody there essentially wants to provide more than they want to score. Even though Alvarez is a really good finisher kind of thing, their first instinct is to be more, you know, drop back a little bit kind of thing. Now, the moment you add someone like Haaland into the mix, now straight away, then you drop one of those players. That's a very basic example, right? So if you extrapolate that to Ivory Coast now, again, the point I made before, automatically he recognized, okay, I haven't got a Dingra fit, so who am I actually going to play? Who's the most similar player there? You know, he started Pepe, I think, one game, but really and truly, he relied on the 36-year-old Max Gradle, because he's someone that, you know, who can go in and out, basically, even though he's 36 years old. And who can, if I go in and out, who can I cross the ball to? Okay, Haller's fit now, so okay, I'm going to start him as well. It's just understanding that those relationships between your players kind of thing. And that, to me, is a very good... If I'm an Ivorian fan, I'm thinking that's a very good sign. Someone that understands straight away strengths and weaknesses of these players. A lot of these coaches in these tournaments, all they do is kind of just play like who's the best player? Who can help me the most, rather than understanding who can actually help each other. Same way Pesero got us to the final by essentially going to a three at the back, because he realised our wing backs, sorry, our centre backs are all great in a three, but in a two they're absolutely pants. You know, no disrespect to our players, but you know, Ekong is a fantastic centre back in a three. He's the best player in the tournament in a three, but in a two he looked very, very funny. So it's just understanding the relationships. And Faye, to me, on the outset, understood the relationships almost straight away.
Well, listen, lads, we're going to get to your teams of the tournament in a second.
Yeah.
But before we go down that path, I just want to ask both of you a question. And we'll start with you, Alistair. Where to for the Ivory Coast from here? The World Cup's coming up. We have the tournament in 2 years' time in Morocco. Where to? Where do they go? What if you look in your crystal ball, do you see? And coach, off the back of that, maybe you pick up for the Super Eagles and you sort of tell us where they go from here.
I think, as someone who is in the same World Cup qualifying group as Cote d'Ivoire, they're in Kenya's World Cup qualifiers, I got to say, Cote d'Ivoire will have no problems qualifying for the World Cup. It should be a very easy ride for them. But I think this is something we need to discuss further along the line, is what this AFCON has done is it's actually also thrown up a lot of possibilities for the World Cup qualifier, because a lot of the big hitters who would have been in those first seeds are suddenly in a position where they have to play some of these smaller teams that could give them a real run for their money. You know, Nigeria in the same group as South Africa, Cape Verde and Angola are in the same group as Cameroon. You know, like these teams can give them a run for their money. Cote d'Ivoire, I think, is different because A, they have a very, in my opinion, quite an easy World Cup qualifying group. Their biggest challenger is Gabon and then Kenya. And so as much as I love Kenya, that we're not going to trouble them. I think they should walk that group easily. And I think what that does is that allows Cote d'Ivoire, with that easier group, is to try and build something. Because we talk about all the time on this podcast and when talking about international football, about cycles, about building things. And Cote d'Ivoire, as much as, you know, say Allaire and Max Gradle were their most kind of perhaps iconic players from this tournament, certainly in this country, and players like Kessier, this team has a lot of very, very good young players. I mean, you think about the center backs they've got. Evan Ndika, 24. Kossin, who's like, 22. Diomande is 20. You know, Wilfred Zingo at right back, 22 as well. You know, Simon Adingra is going to be there for another decade. They've got Karim Konate coming through as one of the most exciting center forwards in Europe at Salzburg. David Datro Fofana, kind of at Chelsea. You know, they have the pieces to build something over the next 2-3 years until that World Cup and to build something really special. And so for me, that's where the coaching is going to be so important, because this is where, you know, there's no way that if Emir Faye wants to stay, they won't give him the job, because he's earned that. He is the most popular man in this country. I can tell you that even before the kickoff of the match, when they were announcing the players, the team sheets,
yeah,
Emir Faye got a bigger cheer than everyone else. And so he will be given this coaching job unless he refuses it. And so that is where this is going to be the big question, because if he can show that he is someone like a Aliou Cisse, and even if he's not as tactically gifted, we've seen other FAs like Senegal bringing in, I can't remember who's the French guy they have, but like bringing in assistant coaches who are more tactically astute, you know, than the head coach. So even if Emir Faye isn't that brilliant coach, and he is just a brilliant man manager, a brilliant guy who manages the players, if they can bring the team around him to build this cycle going up to 2026. Because even 2026, you think Kessier, it might be a bit too late for Jean-Michel Seri, I think, but Kessier, Fofana, they'll both be, 31, I think. They'll both be early 30s, still looking really good and sharp. This is a team that, for me, can be one of those teams like Morocco that goes far in a World Cup. They've got time to build up. So there's a lot of question marks still. But I think for me, this Ivorian team has the building blocks to build. I'll let coach think about Nigeria, but I think it is interesting with like I alluded to, it's we've now got this funny situation where We don't know when the next AFCON is going to be because it's scheduled to be in the summer of 2025 in Morocco. Unfortunately, as is often the case with African planning, well, if I say African CAF's planning, Dr. Patrice Motsepe will probably give in to Gianni Infantino, his good pal, and because the Club World Cup is also in the summer in 2025, I think the AFCON will probably be moved to 2026 in the early year, like January, the normal time we have AFCON. But that presents us with this really interesting scenario where within the next 2 years, essentially, we have to do two sets of qualifiers for the World Cup and for the AFCON. Going to be a lot of competitive football, a lot of must-win games for a lot of these big countries. So there's not going to be the space to build squads in a way that you might be able to if you have friendlies to bring in these young players. And so for me, it's still going to be what are the teams that can build the best squads into the AFCON and then into the World Cup. And for me, those are still the teams like Senegal, like Morocco. But this Ivorian team is really special, and I think they could build into something.
I suppose, look, from a Nigerian perspective, I'm looking at the players that didn't go to the AFCON this year and their ages, and Nigeria left something in the tank, you know. My biggest worry is our centre-backs and our centre-midfielders, because it's a whole defence, actually. I think we've found a solid goalkeeper, genuinely. I think Noah Bali has surprised a lot of people, and I feel like, especially for tournament football, a big presence like that, who's eccentric, who can make big saves and stuff like that. And he's actually quite good at his feet as well. I think he's absolutely fine. But now we're looking at someone like Aina. Aina will be red, will still be a good defender for us in 2-3 years' time. I have no doubt about that. You know, but then our left-back issue, there are some names that are floating about, but, you know, they're unproven. At centre-back, Ekong is going to be what? By the next AFCON, he's going to be 32. He should still be fine, but again, you know, you mentioned before that he wasn't even sure if he was going to make this AFCON squad. So again, there's still those uncertainties. Nigeria's biggest assets obviously are our attackers, but I don't feel like that should be what we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on how do we get the ball to those attackers and who do we include in our squads. I'm perfectly fine with Pesero carrying on for the World Cup qualifiers because I feel like he's got credit in the bank now. Nobody gave us a chance to even make it up, to essentially make it to the knockout stages, I'd say, in this AFCON, and we made it all the way to the final with the best defensive record. So clearly he's a good coach. Taking us to the next level, I'm not 100% sure yet, but again, he was literally one game away from winning us an AFCON, our first AFCON in 11 years. So who's to say that, you know, the next time he might go all the way. The style of football isn't the prettiest. It's not Nigerian heritage. It's not expansive and flamboyant. But again, you know, it's about adapting to your squad. You know, if you don't have the likes of Okocha and Kanu and Babangida, Finidi George, all these flair players kind of thing, you know, you don't try to play that way. You just don't. Overall, in terms of what Nigeria do going forward, I'm at a very, very positive space. You know, when you exceed expectations, you set a new baseline, you set a new benchmark, and it's kind of hard to revert from that. You know, expectations have now changed. So now a lot of people, for example, that might be thinking about, oh, you know, do I switch allegiances to Nigeria and whatnot? They might be thinking, wow, look at Lookman, you know, nobody really thought he'd be the main man for Nigeria. Now look at him, you know. Same thing for someone like Iwobi. Same thing for someone like Ola Aina, you know. There's a lot of players in the diaspora that maybe like having second thoughts, man. By the time, you know, we come around for the next AFCON, we may have, you know, some really top players that we didn't even consider that could be Nigerian, you know, that could play for us. So we have to wait and see. But as a Nigerian, I'm very, very proud of this team. I'm just bitterly disappointed. But, you know, that's football. Somebody has to lose. Somebody has to win.
Yeah, well, before we move on to the teams of the tournament, I'll offer you two thoughts. One, can you imagine what it feels like to be Wilfred Zaha?
I don't even know what to say.
Do you know what I mean? He could have been the man. He could be one of the players who turned it around had he just been more committed to the team. So say the Ivory Coast team. Of course, I'm simplifying what could be seen as a complex storyline. And secondly, as a South African, I leave the tournament with more optimism than maybe I had before. And I know, Ali, you'll tell me I should have the optimism because of the consistency that Hugo Bruce has brought. But, you know, until we're tested in big occasions, you don't know how it will happen. And, you know, I suddenly have more confidence against Nigeria in the qualifiers that maybe we won't beat them, but maybe we can take some points off them and they can drop elsewhere and our qualification could come into being. I will let you lads break through your teams at the tournament. You can fight over who goes first. I'll just say that if none of you pick Ronwen Williams in goal, you guys are one-eyed Kenyan and Nigerian fans.
you can go first.
Sorry, who is that, Zane? Rodwin? I don't know who this guy is.
Go on, give me your team, brother.
All right, so teams of the tournaments are always so difficult because, you know, football is so defined by moments, and there's so much recency bias, so it's hard to judge, like, you know, someone who had a brilliant group stage, but then, you know, gets knocked out in the knockouts, then kind of, is he a player of the tournament? So for me, goalkeeper, yeah, no question, Ronwen Williams. I think Mobali had pushed Ronwen for it up until the final, but I actually think Mobali had a pretty bad game in the final. I think particularly that Kessier header was really poor goalkeeping. But even if Nigeria had won, unless Mobali kind of pulled off an amazing kind of string of saves again, I think for me it would have been Ronwen, class above. I think right back, as I kind of alluded to earlier in the tournament, I think Olaina was by far and away the best right back at this tournament. But I have to be honest, I think in this one game, Simon Adingra kind of ruined his credentials as the player of the tournament. Because, yeah, I know in terms of being a great player over the course of the tournament, you know, is important. But as I said, it comes down to these moments. And in the biggest game for Nigeria, Olaina was, you know, for me, probably their worst player, and Adingra took him to pieces. So I think for me, Mudau kind of edges it because I think Mudau was far more solid. He wasn't as much of an attacking threat, but he kind of contributed to South Africa's football in so many brilliant ways. I think my center backs, Trista Kong, best player of the tournament for me, both defensively and up front. Brilliant, brilliant player, brilliant servant for Nigeria, brilliant captain, wonderful in the media. I agree. And even last night in the mix zone, stopped and spoke longer than anyone, including the Ivorians, you know, even in defeat, really gracious guy. The center back next to him, I went with Logan Costa from Cape Verde. I felt like there weren't any of the final four teams, there weren't any center backs that really jumped out at me. I think some were good, but none of them, whereas Logan Costa for Cape Verde had a brilliant tournament. Him and Pico Lopez were a brilliant duo. Costa also showing kind of his ball playing capacity. So for me, Logan Costa had to be alongside Trista Kong. Left back was a bit of a tough one, but I think in the end I went for Arthur Masuaku. Really, really good tournament for me. Very solid defensively, and particularly his corners, his set piece delivery was excellent. His only blemish was missing a penalty, but in the end it didn't matter in the penalty shootout against Egypt. And I never try and hold penalty shootouts against players too much. So I think for me, he was there. I went with the midfield three. Tevoho Mokoena was there. Fantastic, fantastic performance from him. That free kick alone kind of will live in memory for so long. And I know he missed a couple penalties, but only, you know, the penalty in the third place playoff, I don't really care about. The only blemish for me was that missed penalty in the shootout against Nigeria. But even in that game, he scored a penalty in normal time. It was fantastic. Alongside him, I had Frank Kessier. Again, he speaks for himself, kind of player, man of the match in the semifinal, scores the equalizer in the final, scores the equalizer in the game against Senegal. Brilliant, brilliant performance from him. And I also added Freddie from Angola. I think, again, it's hard for me to find a third midfielder, and I thought Freddie was, without him, Angola wouldn't have got out the group. Without him, Angola wouldn't have got to the quarterfinals. His double assist in the round of 16 against Namibia was fantastic. I think he was a brilliant midfielder. Wingers for me, Ademola Lookman, brilliant tournament, excellent for Nigeria. You know, scored the important goals when Osimhen couldn't. So I think for me, he had to be there. And you know, obviously, although he didn't play as much football, Simon Adingra was magnificent. You know, game changer in all of the knockout matches, whether he was starting, whether he was coming off the bench. And for me, up front was probably the hardest one, because if he had got past the round of 16, Emilio Nsue for me was the best striker in terms of performance, but he also missed the most important penalty of his and Equatorial Guinea's tournament.
if he had scored that and they got to the round of 16, for me, he would have definitely been there. And so I have to go with, as crazy as this is, a one-goal man in Victor Osimhen. Because for me, if Osimhen wasn't playing, Nigeria would have been potentially even knocked out in the groups. They wouldn't have beat Cote d'Ivoire because he won that penalty. They probably wouldn't even beat Equatorial, or got the draw against Equatorial Guinea. And he dragged them through these games. Against South Africa, he won the penalty that put them in the lead. He was immense, immense, immense. So for me, as weird as it is to say, the striker with only one goal for me was the striker of the tournament.
Yeah. All right, coach, would you agree? How does your team shape up compared to Alistair's? Very different.
It's actually quite compelling, some of these arguments. But mine is based purely on, I suppose, impact overall. So some of these impacts to the team, but some of these selections might seem a bit wild in general. But I think you're going to hate me for the first one, but Noah Bali, for me, is the goalkeeper of the tournament. And not because I think
I dislike Chippa United, I think, more than you, because I know they'd be supporting Nigeria. So, one-eyed super eagle. Go on.
I'm so sorry. But do you know what it is for me? It's moments. It's moments combined with the overall impact. Look, after he got injured, I forgot what game it was. It might have been in the group stages where he got injured. The entire country paused for him. You know, journalists were asking, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you going to be ready for our next game? Because we knew we have someone in him, you know, who's a calm head, who's a short stopper, who can actually launch attacks. The amount of times he found Osimhen on his chest from 60 yards, 70 yards was actually unreal. You know, those things matter. And then in our biggest moment, even though I think he was at fault for the first goal yesterday, but in our biggest moment in the semi-final, you know, he saved two penalties against somebody who saved four penalties in the last round. It was just such a huge, huge moment. You know, at right back, I think nobody can have any disagreements. Me and somebody that on my time were actually laughing at the fact that, you know, Aina's in the running to be a player of the tournament, just purely on a vibes perspective. You know, he's so good on the ball and whatnot. But genuinely, he was just very, very good. Yesterday was, much like Nigeria in general, we saved his worst performance for the final. I think he's just been very, very solid. And the fact that he played left back this tournament as well, again, that versatility helping Nigeria get through games and manage games just by being versatile. Second centre back would be Kasunu. Again, watched him for Leverkusen as well. And he just carried his form through. I think he's probably going to end up being the best African centre back, you know, very, very soon. I think he's a top, top quality. Player of the tournament, obviously Ekong. I'm not being funny. I never got to watch Baresi at a big level. You know, I'm sure you did, Zane. You're a little bit older than me, but I'm not being funny. I don't think Baresi was this good personally. I can't see how Baresi was this good. Genuinely. I don't think he's ever put
together. That's big. That's very big.
I'm joking, obviously, but I think impact. I don't think there was a more impactful player this tournament. Again, I mentioned he was probably our shortest player in our defense, but he was a giant in the air. And on the ball, you know, he was when we did use our midfield, he was finding passes into them pretty easily. You know, he was so, so good. Left back, Masaku. When I watched him at West Ham, I was like, this player, I would love to have him in my 7-a-side team or 5-a-side team because he's just so good on the ball. And then you watch him for Congo, and he's one of their playmakers. Essentially, he's one of the people that starts their attacks and whatnot. You know, that goal he scored from the free kick was deliberate because he did it against Chelsea as well. You know, he's a very, very clever and technically sound player. I think he's just fantastic. I've mentioned Seri so many times. I'm not going to mention him anymore because it is what it is. He just deserves to be in the team of the tournament. He changed the trajectory of this Ivory Coast team so, so much. You know. Different profile to their normal, to their regular midfield three, and he helped them loads, you know, organising as well as his passing. Kessier, again, big moments. He didn't start every single game, you know, he played his role, but every time he was called upon, he helped. He helped loads, absolute loads, and obviously he speaks for himself. In the final, he scored equaliser. Mokoena, dead ball specialist, superb passer, and an organizer as well. Everything that South Africa did good in that team came through him. All of the passing combinations, relieving pressure, calming the game down. He was just so, so impressive. My first forward, again, a 4-3-3. Ademola Lookman, 3 goals. The, you know, he's helped revive the big man, little man strike partnership. he was put like this. I know we spoke about Osimhen's impact. You know, Nigeria might not have made it out of the group, but generally speaking, who's going to put the goals away? Who would have put the goals away? You know, these things are super, super important. So for me, absolutely, definitely important. Mabalulu, for his finish alone, deserves to be in that tournament. But in general as well, when a team like Angola are, you know, impressed everyone kind of thing, and nobody can really pick, you know, who their best player is kind of thing, to me, he's the one that stood out personally for me. He looked like the man. And despite them obviously coming up short against Nigeria, again, I still think he was fantastic for sure. And up front, I'm going to go with Osimhen, and not because, again, you know, he scored the most goals or whatnot. In Sue, for me, I always judge strikers and, you know, especially pure number nines and how many goals they score. But if you score all these great goals in the group stages and whatnot, and then when it matters most, you don't contribute, you know, to winning a penalty or creating a goal kind of thing, it's kind of hard for me to overlook that. And despite him scoring, you know, being a top scorer kind of thing, Osimhen battered every single centre-back he came up. I'm sure if you ask every single centre-back this tournament, you know, who did they hate playing against the most, it's going to be Osimhen across the board. Even if they didn't play against him, I'm glad they didn't play against him because he would be giving me a bad day. So that's my team of the tournament. Again, I'm looking back at the goalkeeper. You know, it's harsh for Ron Wren to miss out, but Nwabali just edits it for me. But yeah.
Sorry, took me a little while to come off mute, but yeah. We're stuck. But listen, those are fantastic debates, discussions, and teams. And listen, if you're listening out there to either the On the Whistle podcast or the Shirtless Plantain podcast, please go comment. Tell us if you agree with Alistair. Tell us if you agree with Coach. Tell us if you disagree. I know I disagree because Ronwyn Williams should be in goals. I know that Nsue should be the starting striker, and I think that Alistair and Coach are too harsh on him on one game because the man delivered. Listen, come in. Let us know what you think. OTW_podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at OTW_podcast, or just search for the On the Whistle podcast. Coach, if people want to reach out to the Shirtless Plantain, what handle should they hit you guys up on?
So on Twitter, it's The Plantain Show. On TikTok, it's the same. On Instagram, it's the same. Yeah, hit us up, comment, like, subscribe, share with your friends and whatnot, especially to the majority of our listeners, which are in America. The World Cup's coming soon, right? You want to get involved in football. You want to get involved in football. Share this podcast with them. Like, you know, you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah. And listen, Coach, and maybe Ali should get the final word here. It's been absolutely amazing to just collaborate with you guys. We really enjoyed it. We hope it's something that as we continue to build our platform and focus in on African football, our stars on the continent, our teams on the continent and those abroad, mm-hmm. and those stories, that there'll be places for us to meet, share, sit around the virtual braai and talk. It's been absolutely. Such a pleasure getting to know you and your team.
Absolutely. I'm genuinely looking forward to working with you guys even more. And for me personally, someone who you know has dedicated so much time to football in general, I'm not saying I find it hard to learn a lot more, but it's been so refreshing to learn even more. Just from our conversations. Genuinely, it's been so refreshing. I'm genuinely grateful that you guys accepted our invitation. So yeah, thank you guys, and here's to working together even more.
Amen. Ali, final word to you.
Final word would be, guys, particularly for, I guess, those who follow more coaches' side of things, the Shirtless Plantain Show. Guys, African football is year-round. You know, this festival, this party is not a once every 2 years thing. You know, in 2 weeks' time, the CAF Champions League is back. Yeah. Okay? You want to see some of these guys who have been performing. You want to see Teboho Mokwena. You want to see Peter Shalulule. You want to see some of these guys playing. You want to see, you know, Esham Ashour, who is probably Egypt's best player at this tournament. They'll be in action. They'll be playing in the CAF Champions League. We've got We've got the CHAN, the African Cup of Nations, for only locally based players coming to Kenya later this year. We've got the Women's AFCON coming later this year. When, we don't know yet, because CAF hasn't got our act together and hasn't told us.
But they will be playing.
We've got the Women's
AFCON. If you're a fan of Novali, you definitely have to watch the Premier Soccer League because he plays for Chippa United.
The PSL, yeah.
Which one, I don't know.
Yeah, let me tell you.
What was it? His equivalent?
Yeah, what I would say is...
Ali would be... Who would you say the equivalent of Chippa United would be? West Ham?
Chippa, I don't know. Nottingham. Nah, that's too high. Nottingham Forest? Maybe?
Nottingham Forest. Like, exactly.
I think they're... Yeah, someone like that. Yeah. And yeah, so for me, look, follow African football. Follow these storylines. Yeah. Just watch the PSL. You know, there's, you know, over 30 of players who are at this tournament playing the PSL. I think 6 goalkeepers. The last thing I'll say is, even like Tanzanian club football, this is a tournament where in the quarterfinals, round of 16, in the semifinals, we've seen players from Tanzania, you know, Enoch Banga, Fiston Maele came off the bench multiple times, Jigui Diarra, Mali's starting goalkeeper, playing for Yanga and Simba. So, you know, Mabalulu playing in Egypt. So that's all I would say is, guys, African football is a constant. It's a year-round thing. There's more chaos. There's more beautiful football. There's more wonderful football.
And they're the best stories in the world. You know, we haven't even spoken about, and I know Fredoz wants to do this, all the Palestinian flags that were waving at the AFCON. Right. And no, and I'm not here taking a stance on whether you agree or whether you like it or wherever you stand. But, you know, there's so many strands that come into this. Sorry, go on, coach.
No, see, I definitely stand Palestine. I also stand with Congo as well. Congo probably made the biggest political
statement. With their protest.
With their protest. And I feel like I was a bit disappointed in the broadcast and the fact that it was clearly censored. That was very done in bad. That was done in very bad taste. And it's shocking because it's an African tournament. You know, it shouldn't be controversial. Controversial to highlight these things. And they made it controversial, which is incredibly strange. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But, you know, just so we're clear on this, like, we stand with the plight of the Congolese people, we stand with the plight of the Palestinian people, and injustices everywhere in general. You know, this is to my mind, this is both our platforms are standing on, you know, not sound too self-righteous, but we're standing on the right side of history, I'd like to say, at least in regards to these things, you know, especially what happened yesterday during the Super Bowl. You know, so yeah, I think it's clear. I think it's very important to highlight this kind of thing.
Well, listen, coach, always wonderful getting your perspective, always wonderful hearing from you, Alistair. And as I say, so many important topics that deserve a lot more discussion, debate, and also nuance. And we're happy to provide all of that. Coach, a pleasure having you on. Ali, always good seeing you. Travel safe from Abidjan. Go and take a break. Come back in a little while. You need it. Rest, recover, eat some haggis, whatever you're missing from home. And we'll see you soon.
I have this trip on me, I feel amazing. And you're so special, it's the occasion. And the pop champagne like it's a celebration. All across the nation. Are you ready?
P-L-A-N-T-A.
Are you ready?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.